Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, November 16th, 2020. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded. We do place the meeting audios on our website, which is wmata.com. All the meetings, whether it's the full committee or the subcommittee meetings, the audio is placed on our website. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you'd like to make some comments, you can virtually raise your hands by pressing *9. You can also press *9 to lower your virtual hands. Everyone joining via the video conference, video call, you can click on the speaker icon and that will mute or unmute your voice. You can also raise virtual hands by clicking on the hand icon. We do have interpreters on the line with us. So please state your name first when making comments. This not only helps them do their job well, it also helps anyone listening on our phone calls, through phone calls, knowing who's speaking. And I do appreciate one speaker at a time. So in advance, thank you for that. At this time, I will take a roll call of the committee members, and the roster is as follows. Elver Ariza Silver. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Present.
Thank you. Melanie Jackson.
Present.
Thank you. Steve Caffin. Mary Kay McMahon. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony emailed informing he will not be able to join us. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Samerford.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly, excuse me, Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simona. All right, that concludes our roster for today's meeting. At this time, I will read the agenda for today's meeting, and the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting agenda is as follows. We just went through the call to order and roll call. Afterwards, we will review the agenda for today's meeting and the minutes from last month's meeting. Both will be approved. At 4:10, we will have the customer service and outreach reports, followed by Michael Wilson Award and Rich Award. We have a presentation by Mr. Blake about Metro Access sedan procurement. Mr. Blake will be giving us some update about that. Mr. Schaefer will be giving us an update about the Metro Access web booking. Mr. Schaefer will also give us an update about, information about easy pay conversion and password requirement. Mr. Blake will also give us information about next generation Metro Access van solicitation. The committee, the Hettinger Award announcement will be afterwards, followed by public comment period. And the meeting adjournment is at 6 p.m. At this point, I would ask Chair Samerford to move the meeting forward. Chair Samerford, you have the floor.
All right, everybody, good afternoon. So we're gonna begin with our review of the agenda and minutes from the prior meeting. Are there any additions to this very long agenda? Hearing the crickets, we're going. I would like to get a motion to move the agenda as is.
So moved.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Second.
Nays, abstentions, the motion carries. We're approving the agenda as is. Next is the minutes from the prior meeting. Are there any additions, changes, suggestions for last month's minutes? Hearing the crickets, can someone approve the minutes from last month as is?
So moved.
A second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor of approving the minutes as is, please do so. Please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions, the motion carries. Also, anyone who wants to speak for public comment, if you want to just let Anu know, send her, I guess, a chat or the normal way you would reach her. Please do that if you're on here and want to make comment or public comment, or let me know at some point. But let Anu know first. Thank you. Next is going to be customer service and outreach reports. Ms. Anderson.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Allison Anderson. At this time, I would like to have Kay Clark with MTM give us information regarding the public comments from our last session.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. We did have a few comments from the last meetings. The first, the customer had a concern regarding fixed route. She has been able to catch a shuttle since the shutdown and buses were not able to accommodate her power wheelchair. She also mentioned during an accidental fire alarm at the Bethesda Metro Center, the operator did not have the key to access the elevator. Ms. Lopez from the Office of ADA and Planning informed her the station managers are equipped with keys, and Mr. Blake informed her that the shuttle buses are available upon request. The second, the customer inquired about budget documents not being available in Braille and mentioned the brief reporting on budgets was not specific and the person providing updates was not knowledgeable. The customer also mentioned the Metro Access webpage needed to be updated to accommodate the disabled community. Mr. Blake informed the customer the budget documents are accessible and a request has to be made for a Braille translation. The budget update will be done by him personally, and Mr. Blake acknowledged that there are still improvements being made to the website. The next, the customer expressed his concerns regarding the application process for Metro Access. His doctor would not sign his paperwork unless it specifically said deaf on the application. Mr. Antoine Johnson, the operations manager for eligibility, informed the customer that there's a section on the application for a code, and the doctor has to write in the code as well as the customer's specific disability. These are all the comments that I have to report today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Chair, there are no reports as of this session regarding outreach.
All right. So we're going to move next to
the- Paul, this is Mary Beth, the interpreter.
Yes.
Rico typed in the chat, yes, but I want to just check in with him and make sure. I can't see him right now, but I want to check in and make sure he didn't have any comments about that. Is the now the time for comments or not, Paul?
If you want, only as it has to do for this specific report. Now, I can put you for customer comment period if you want to speak then.
Chair Simon Ford, this is Anu and Mary Beth. I did send him a message asking Rico if he wants to make public comments during that segment, and he probably responded yes to that.
He said that he would like to, he said that he would like to comment now. He's not letting me, hold. Rico said that he wants to comment now. Paul, is this the time to comment now?
If it relates to this specific report. If not, I can put him down for public comment.
He's answering, he's thinking. We'll wait. Do you want him to add you to public comment? Yes. Yes, please do that, Paul.
Okay. Anu has it taken care of. She will add you to public comment. Good. All right. Next is going to be the Michael Wilson and Rush Awards. Is there a recipient for Michael Wilson Award, Ms. Anderson, or anyone?
Yes, sir. There is. So a recipient for the Michael Wilson Award. So at this time, pardon me?
Oh, no, I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. I thought somebody said something. All right. So at this time, I'd like to present Mr. Robbie Worth with Diamond Transportation National Express.
Okay, thank you, Allison, and thank you, Chairman Semaford. Appreciate the opportunity to present this month's Michael Wilson Award to Charles Watkins Sr. I just want to make sure that Mr. Watkins is in the conversation so we can hear all these great things about him. So, Charles, hey, are you there?
Hi, Robbie. It's Steph. He's literally 2 minutes away. He's just coming in the car. We had a roadside to go and pick him up.
Okay, can we wait a couple of minutes, or can you go on and come back to this, Paul? So, Ms.
Sure.
Can be there.
Ms. Rush, is there a Rush Award recipient?
No, there is not. Thank you.
Okay, so let's see. Because we started with Mr. Blake, it's going to be a long presentation. I don't think there might be a break to get back to you until later. Is that okay, Mr. Yeah. Worth?
Stephanie, is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's okay. I don't want him to miss it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so no further ado, we're going to start with Mr. Blake on his presentation. He sent us a document earlier this morning in terms of an amendment for this. So hopefully y'all got a chance to see it today. And I'm going to let Mr. Blake present and take it away.
Okay, good evening. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Chris Blake speaking. It's not so much a presentation. Let me clarify. What I wanted to do, and at first was supposed to have Diane Graham from procurement here. Unfortunately, she told me a little earlier she could not make it today, but I have the information she was going to share. In addition to what we shared earlier, let me just start by being clear. This is in response to a specific question that was raised by Chairman Posner during the AAC meeting about the procurement itself for the Camrys, the new Metro Access sedans. But let's make no mistake in this discussion, this is not a negotiation. The decision has been made. I am moving forward with the purchase. I want to be clear on that. This is not a negotiation discussion or even for advisory at this point. The decision is made and we're going to have this Toyota Camry hybrids as part of the Metro Access fleet. But the chairman did raise a very good question during the meeting, and I didn't want that to go without being addressed because I thought it was an important question. So what Chairman Posner raised at the AAC meeting were the specific technical specifications of the Metro Access sedan procurement. Those technical specifications included the following. The exterior sedan color must be white. Sedans must have a fuel rating of at least 46 miles per gallon in the city. Sedans must have at least 90 degree door opening angle for easy entry and exit. Sedans must have at least 38 inches of rear leg room, at least 39 inches of front leg room, 36 inches of front head room, 36 inches of rear head room. And if they were offering a hybrid, the manufacturer warranty of the battery had to be at least 6 years. So those were the initial technical specifications. What the chairman raised last week was, well, if those are the technical specifications, how did you get a Toyota Camry hybrid when those doors, at least not all of them, open at 90 degrees? And what I sent out this morning was an amendment to the technical specifications that were issued on February 26, 2020. So a couple of months into this. And the purpose of the amendment and the reason why the amendment was drafted was because while we received several questions, we received no proposals for the vehicle as the original technical specifications were outlined. So in that amendment, there was a change in the technical specification. There was only one main change. And the one main change was we removed the 90-degree opening angle as a requirement. After that was done, we then received one proposal, and that one proposal was for the Toyota Camry Hybrid that we then decided and chose and selected as the vehicle to add to the Metro Access fleet. So I wanted to just come back to that question again. I think it was a great question he raised. It was a very good point. The original solicitation had the 90-degree door opening angle in it. We received no proposals for it. Went back, made an amendment, took that out. We received one proposal, and we awarded the contract to the company that made that proposal. And we're moving forward with purchasing. It will be a total of 177. We purchased 175 and then added to the two that some of you have been riding in for the opportunity to get your feedback and get feedback from customers as well as the operators. So that's my presentation, if you want to call it a presentation, Mr. Chairman, but I can ask her any questions about this. And I would also say, because this relates to the next subject, I would ask David to go after me and let me talk about the vans right after we're finished this, because I think we have to utilize this lessons learned in terms of how we're going to approach these things in terms of the next vehicle purchase that will very soon be underway as well. But if you have any questions on the sedan solicitation, I'm here to answer the questions as best I can without Diane being here.
Okay. Let me ask right now, Mr. Worth, are you ready to do your award recipient?
I do see Mr. Watkins present.
Thank you. Yes. Hey, Paul.
All right. So we're going to do that quickly, and then we're going to, then I'm going to line up, New will help me line up the people who want to speak to Mr. Blake's, to the question of this, the Senate sedan. So go ahead, Mr. Worth.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for your flexibility, Mr. Chair. So Charles Watkins Sr., he began his career with Diamond Transportation National Express on March 14th of 2016. His tenure began since his tenure, Mr. Watkins had completed 6,619 trips with an average on-time performance of over 90%. When I drilled down on this, Mr. Chair, I also found that Mr. Watkins in 2019 had an on-time performance of over 95%. And so far this year, he's at an on-time performance of 98%. He's committed.
Awesome.
Yes. He is committed to a culture of safety, safe driving on a daily basis. He also maintains a professional attitude at all times, plus safety of his passengers and well-being first. He always reports to duty on time, rested and alert, and ready for work. In his spare time, Mr. Watkins enjoys spending time with his family and friends and loved ones, being with his 8 grandchildren. He also enjoys watching and playing sports such as basketball and football. We enjoy his laughter and his smile that is always on his face. Mr. Watkins Sr. shows great pride and joy, displays loyalty and honesty, preserves and achieves goals. Diamond Transportation National Express is honored to have such a compassionate, caring, dedicated, and safe employee, Charles Watkins Sr. I might also add that I think that this is the first time that we now have a dual recipient of both the Rush Award and now the Michael Wilson Award, because he received the Russ Award in 2019. So congratulations, Charles, and thank you for all that you do.
Thank you very much.
Would you like to say something at this time, Charles?
Well, I'm glad that you guys is really looking. I see somebody is looking, and I thank you guys very much. I see Paul up there. How you doing, Paul?
All right.
Good, good, good. Love you guys. We family. I'm going to do what I got to do to keep it safe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charles.
All right. Thank you. And now we're going back to speakers list. Who is wants to speak? Anu, who do you have? So I can begin.
I have Dr. Posner.
All right. Then followed by who?
That's all I have. I have only one name on the list.
Not Ms. Rush, not Pat Sheehan. Okay, we'll start with Dr. Posner. Okay. All right. Go ahead and make your comments.
Trust me, I have questions on the next one.
Actually, I have two questions. One is about the original submission RFP, and the other one is about the amendment. But on the original, correct me if I'm wrong, but most of the vehicles that have been bought in the past, which are the vans for Metro Access, have been bought as vans from the company. And then they were contracted to an upfitter to do all of the appropriate changes, as in painting them with Metro Access signs, putting in the Rangers, et cetera, et cetera. For some reason, the original RFP that went out saying that these sedans will be painted with Metro Access, not just painted white, but painted with Metro Access on it and with other things such as the Rangers and the emergency kits, et cetera, et cetera. And so the procedure is, why was that suddenly changed? Because as you know, buying a sedan off the lot, they just want to sell you a sedan. They may sell you a particular color that you ask, but they're not going to do all the upfitting that are typically done. And that's probably why nobody bid on the contract. The second comment in the question was, sedans are not required to meet Americans with Disability Act. That's absolutely correct if you're buying a sedan, but WMATA is not buying a sedan, they're buying a paratransit vehicle, as is noted by the original RFP, which was said for Metro Access. And so those are two problems. One, the original procedure of why did they not just bid on sedans, which would have given you the 90 degree angle, the best gas mileage, the best price, and all of the other things that we asked for, and not have to worry about getting the painting done and all the other stuff, which is going to go to an upfitter.
So that's the first question is a good question. And I, long before we got to the amendment, that was a debate I had with my procurement colleagues. But again, at the end of the day, I respect protocol, I respect jurisdiction. In this case, it was their jurisdiction and their decision, because I approached them with a new off the lot vehicle approach. That was the decision, and I respect their decision, but I agree with you, and I don't think I'm sharing any secrets. I've said to them privately, and you're just expressing what I said privately. I believe that there would have been hundreds of bidders per perhaps the same vehicle, but there would have been many, many more bidders had we separated upfitting from the purchase of the vehicles themselves. However, in this case, I think if I'm to speak for the upper echelon of procurement, upfitting in a vehicle in the terminology that we are used to using has been the taking a vehicle off the lot like a Ford Transit that looks just like a Ford Transit, but then upfitting it to a different whole type of purpose in use vehicle, i.e. the installation of a wheelchair lift. That is considered by some as upfitting. Installing some placards, some letters, a paint job, even though there's really no paint there, there was just some stickers, and installing a ranger to some, and it's just a philosophical difference, is not really upfitting per se. We use the word, but upfitting to some is completely changing an off-the-lot vehicle from its real look. Had we followed, let's say, your recommendation to take out the front seat, the front passenger seat, that would be considered a major modification and therefore upfitting. To simply put the big M on the side of the vehicle and install a Ranger is not considered upfitting by some. So that's a philosophical difference, but I think what you've said is what I've said privately. If we could have separated the two, probably could have had more bids.
But did they explain why they chose to do it the way they did it?
They never expressed it to me in a way that I can articulate that, because it was very contentious. Let's just put it that way. So well,
this is running up twice. And the question I have is, if it failed the first time to get any bids, didn't they think that it didn't get any bids because nobody wanted to do all the quote upfitting and send it out without the upfitting? And I'm not picking on you, Mr. Blake.
No, I get you. I'm but again, asking, it's a
you see, I wish that the young lady would have shown up to explain what she did.
And
these are questions that I hope the Inspector General will ask her.
Okay, and perhaps, but I doubt it, because again, it's a philosophical approach. But in the end, we received a vehicle, a good vehicle. We're moving forward. Now, let me just go to your second question, though, on number three. The answer to that is, again, this question was coming from somebody who's used to working with Metro in terms of changing and completely modifying a vehicle, not buying a vehicle off the lot and simply, let's say, putting the letter M on the vehicle. So what the person was, the point they were making in that answer to the question is that the contractor must comply with the ADA. The response, sedans are not required to meet ADA, is any company that does business with Metro must certify that they meet all applicable laws and regulations, including the ADA. And when it comes to a Metro, when it comes to a paratransit vehicle, there is no language in the ADA that says every paratransit vehicle must have A, B, C, or D, this, that. So the answer there is the vehicles are allowed for use of a paratransit service. That's absolutely clear. Maybe the way she answered it, I may have worded it differently, but again, the point they were making is that the contractor must comply. Does the vehicle have any standards in the ADA that says it has to have this or that? If the ADA said it, then the contractor would have to comply in proposing that vehicle, but there is no such language in the ADA.
So there are no ADA standards for paratransit vehicles?
No, sir. No, sir.
All right, we have another speaker behind
Ms. Lopez, I think, is shaking her head no, so can I ask Carol to explain what you
think? All right, so the next person after you, Phil, response.
Do you have a comment, Carol? I mean, it's fine if you have a comment.
I see your hand, Mr. Torres. You're next.
Do you want me to answer?
Yeah, please, Carol.
Okay. No, I think that you said your question was you're saying that there are no ADA standards for paratransit vehicles. And that's not, I don't think that was the question you were saying. For sedans, there are no ADA standards.
But if those sedans are being used as paratransit vehicles, do they have to meet a standard?
There's no provision for that.
There is no language, and I challenge you. I mean, you could go and ask a lawyer or someone, but I could challenge you, and I tell you that paratransit services all across the country, including the one I just came from down the road, there is no language in the ADA that says if a vehicle is going to be used for paratransit service and it's a sedan, it must have X amount of headroom, X amount of legroom. There's just no language of that nature. And that's why vehicles of varying types are used for paratransit service.
Hold on, Denise. I'm going to let Mr. Torres go first because he had his hand up, and then you go next.
I had my hand up. It just wasn't seen, I guess, but okay.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Torres, and then Ms. Rush.
Hello, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. To put it lightly, I am very stunned by events unfolding here this evening. But I have a question before I get started. And this is to Mr. Blake. In understanding how procurement works at WMATA, at least in terms of how Metro Access works with procurement at WMATA, how does it work? Is it that you tell them what you want to purchase based on a set of specifications, and then they go and try and find what you tell them? Or how does that work?
Yes, we inform them of what our business goals are, and we give them a scope of work, if we will, and we outline things that we absolutely need to have and things that we desire. And then they go to the marketplace and conduct a competitive, fair, and open procurement process.
Okay, so basically you give them the specs and they find it. So they essentially just do the shopping and purchasing.
Essentially, yes.
Based on criteria you establish.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm almost rendered speechless here, because what we're hearing here is that we were supposed to hear, the procurement person was supposed to speak to us this evening, but all of a sudden she has disappeared and is unavailable for whatever reasons. I'm highly suspicious about that. And I am concerned about that, because what it means is that WMATA basically is continuing its pattern of a rogue operation where people don't seem to have accountability. And that is very sad. Now, if I was in the turkey business, and I need to buy a truck to transport turkeys, wouldn't it behoove me to buy a truck that met the specifications for transporting turkeys? If we are in the business of transporting persons with disabilities, and people with disabilities come with specific needs, wouldn't it behoove us that if we are purchasing vehicles for people to transport people with disabilities, that those vehicles should meet to the extent possible a standard for accommodating people with disabilities? And then thirdly, basically what we are doing here, ladies and gentlemen, we are closing the door, or attempting to close the door, after the horse has left the barn. Because this discussion that we're having here should have taken place way back in January, February, before all of this went forward.
It did take place.
I'm talking about in terms of establishing the standards. On the agenda. Hold on.
Can I correct you? I got to correct you.
No. I need to finish what I need fully form my please. Point, and then okay. And then you certainly will have the floor, sir. The point I'm trying to make here is that we're in the process of designing the super bus for the disabled, the bus that will have everything that disabled people need in order to be able to be transported on it. And I think, if my memory serves me right, and I haven't been to every meeting, so I don't know, I believe we have been visited twice by the person who is putting together the design for this vehicle. I don't remember the disabled community getting an input at the very beginning
on the specification standards for the vehicle. We were shown vehicles and we say, and we were told, oh, choose from that. Well, that's not giving us an opportunity to decide a standard. And once the standards were developed, they were not submitted to the committee. I think at one meeting we were told, oh, go look on the web, you'll find it there. Okay. And it was very hard for us to find it there, which means there was no attempt to accommodate persons at the committee and people in the public who want to comment. That seems to me a bit of hide and seek. Again, continuing the pattern of avoidance and non-transparency that seems to be the regular habit at Metro Access. And Mr. Blake, you may believe that this is a done deal, but as long as I can fight you, I will fight you to the last. I will not go quietly into the night on this, because what you are doing is that you are abusing the disabled community with your attitude, with your decisions, with your policy, and I reject you because of it. Thank you.
No problem. All right. Okay, well, let's go to Denise and I'll wrap up with this.
All right, go ahead, Ms. Rush.
Responding to that.
Ms. Rush? Is Ms. Rush there?
I'm trying to find her. One moment.
Okay, this is Denise Rush.
Go ahead.
In reading the correspondence, we know that you submitted, we finally found out, Phil sent to me what we submitted. In February, you made a change, an amendment. It is 9 months later that you send this morning the amendment. I want to know what happened between February and November. Even in February or March, I don't understand why you didn't communicate. We didn't get a bid, and we're going to have to make some changes. We're hearing it 9 months later. I don't understand.
Okay, well, let me help you understand, because I think part of what I'm hearing is members of the AAC are under the impression that you have more authority within the Metro procurement process than you actually do. I just have to be frank and
blunt about it. I don't think it's...
Can I finish, Ms. Rush? You say you don't understand. The advisory board, the AAC's role is to advise the board. And by chance, you're advising staff, and we work with you, and you gave us good advice on the sedan and the specs we would use for the sedans. Once we go to the procurement process, the role of the AAC is ended. The AAC has no negotiating role, no updating role, no discussion role. You gave us advice. We take your advice under advisement, and we moved on with the procurement process. The reason why you didn't get an update in February, because there was a question. The question was raised to me after we made the purchase, so I shared a public document with the chair a couple of weeks ago and with the group today because we were going to discuss it. If we weren't discussing it, I wouldn't be talking about it. But I want you to keep in mind, because see, if you're under this impression that Metro has an obligation, you gave us advice, and I heard the last speaker say that he hasn't been at every meeting, so he doesn't know. So I'm gonna read off what the AAC advised when it comes to the new van. But that new van procurement is about to go public. And once it goes public, the advisory role of the AAC has ended. Until we purchase the vehicle, and then you can give us feedback and we'll take that into consideration as you've done with the Ford Transits and we've made some changes there. But the idea that, for example, with the next discussion, that I'm going to give you a point by point, change by change update on every step of the procurement process. That's just not going to happen because that's not the role of the AAC. The role is to advise us. You gave me great advice on the sedans. We incorporated most of it, but not all of it. And I will say this, and I have to just be frank, and we're all adults here. If the idea of the AAC or some members of the disability community is that if you don't get everything you advise, even if we try to get everything, but if you don't get everything you advise, that somehow we're disrespecting you, we're abusing you and all this other kind of stuff I dismiss, but we're disrespecting and not listening to you if you don't get 100% of what you asked for. Well, I'm not going to apologize for that, but that's your feelings and I respect your feelings, and people, we all have feelings. If that's your feeling, I respect it. But I would just tell you that nobody gets 100% of what they want, not even me. I'm running the show. I didn't get my, you know, I was going to have the, what was it? The Chevy Malibu. So we take advice. We take advice. We incorporate the advice into our business decisions. And at the end of the day, we make the best decision for the customer, the operations, and the taxpayers. And in this case, that is exactly what we did. Did you get everything you want in terms of the name, brand, and the make and model?
No.
No, you didn't. But for the
vast majority,
Ms. Rush, can I finish this? I'm almost done. For the vast majority of customers, especially when the fact that we have a vehicle that has 90-degree door openings called the Ford Transit, dozens of customers have already expressed a desire to ride only in a sedan, the Metro sedan. Hundreds of customers, well, when service is normal, express a desire to only be in a cab, which are all sedans. And I'll just close on this and say this, that we're in the accommodation business. Yeah, Southwest Airlines uses the same vehicle for all their fleet, and they just pile people up on a plane. For a AAC to say that we should only have one type of vehicle for everybody when there are different people with different disabilities and who some express that they would prefer a sedan for their comfort and the impact of their disability, but the AAC would say to them, no, we're not worried about your disability. You get in the van because we want everybody to be in the same type of vehicle. I can't go along with that. We are moving in a different direction with Metro Access again for the efficiency, the comfort of the customers and their individual disabilities, as well as cost and service impact. But once the procurement process is underway, the AAC's role is over until we get to the point of actually purchasing whatever product or service we're talking about.
May I say something in response to that, please?
Mr. Torres,
this yes. is
before you go, Dr. Posner has his hand up. So, Dr.
Yes, Posner. Yes, okay.
All right, so go, Phil. Phil? Is someone going to unmute him? To see. Okay, if not, I guess
I'm unmuted.
Okay.
Agree with what you said about our role, and that is to advise staff, and the staff go forward to procurement. And so to procurement to make the decisions that they do. But I believe that as the users of the things that are purchased, we are owed an explanation from procurement as to why they did what they did. And there are things called lessons learned in every large organization. And it might be that procurement needs to learn a lesson that they could have just bought the sedans and gotten the best sedan that would have met everything that you addressed that they do, and then go through the normal procedure that we do and have the upfitting done otherwise. And so we don't want to tell them what to do because then the IG would be very upset. But we do have the right to ask them to explain to us why they did what they did, because they changed the RFP. They had two different amendments that went through before they finally gave the bid to an upfitter, not to a sedan company, to an upfitter. And it's really funny, if I were the inspector general, I would really wonder why they chose to give it to an upfitter to buy a sedan rather than get a less expensive vehicle. And so that's all I'm saying. We know our role as advisory. You hear me say that on a regular basis at every meeting. But I think, unfortunately, the young lady didn't show up tonight, but hopefully I'm requesting that the board and the general manager and the inspector general ask her why she made the decision she made and came up with a vehicle that only has one 90-degree door that opens, that is in the front seat, which will go against the COVID recommendations of having passengers right next to the driver, among other problems. But anyway, thank you. And I also want to explain, we're not angry with you.
Well, I don't take none of this personal. This is my job, so I never take anything personal. But I will tell you that I supported everything my colleague did. They didn't do it in a vacuum, and the decisions they made certainly was done in consultation with me. And when I saw that there were no bids for the vehicle as the procurement went out, I think the only question, because it wasn't my answer, the only question is why couldn't we split upfitting from vehicle purchase? Everything else, the amendment, the purchase, the award, I support 100%, and I was there to encourage it and make it happen as fast as possible. And I completely believe that this is a very pro customer vehicle. Is it a pro 100% customer vehicle? No, but neither was the Ford Transit, neither was the E350. I have been in other places, and I know, just again, the history here. Hundreds of customers already know about it. Dozens have asked me personally, because you know I speak to customers directly. And I know once they're out there and they're rolling around, we'll have thousands of customers who will specifically request only to use a sedan. So I support this 100%, and I take full responsibility for it. Only thing, again, because it was a philosophical difference with me and my colleague, was why couldn't we differentiate the purchase and the quote unquote upfitting for that regard. But otherwise, I'm 100% in support of this. And it's, to me, I don't know who some people who are speaking are representing, but I know by speaking to hundreds of customers personally, I know who I'm representing. So I don't take it personal, and it's completely fair for the AAC to express itself, Dr. Chair, and you'll put it in your report, and I'm sure you'll be saying it to the board and the general manager next month when he's at the AAC meeting in a couple of weeks.
All right, so I'm going to take two more comments, and that will be from, I believe, Denise and Mr. Torres. Then we do need to close this subject so you can go on with the next topic so we can get to the other pieces.
Okay, this is Denise Rush. I understand the role of the AAC. I understand your position. All I'm asking is, even if we don't get what we want, can we be notified of it? You know, it's just like, okay, I really want a red pocketbook. And the sales lady says, look, I don't have any red pocketbooks. Will you look at this tan pocketbook? You've already told me you don't have it. But you don't tell us anything to today? You're saying you're not obligated? We're just expecting common courtesy. We're thinking that I'm getting a red bag and I'm not. That's all. I don't understand that. We tell you things as soon as it happens or if there's a concern. And what in February, when you didn't get any bids, okay, we're at the AAC meeting in March. You know, I know you all gave us what you wanted, and we didn't get any bids for that, and we're going to have to make an amendment. I don't think that's too much to expect. And if it is, I guess I need to
respectfully disagree with you, Ms. Rush. I'm not going to make the commitment that during procurement processes that I'm going to be speaking of those things in that way. That's just not the role of me to AAC, and it's not the role of the AAC, because you're not in a good negotiating posture. We're not negotiating, and we don't want to open the door where it gives the appearance, okay, you're not going to get this, but you're going to get this, and we still end up in the same position we are, whether it's February or you know, November. What you advised was, we said we made a business decision. Chris Blake made a business decision that because of the feedback I've received from customers, because of my experience in other places, and because of the history of Metro when you did have sedans in the Metro Access fleet, Chris Blake knows that a large number of customers in this area would like to ride in sedans. That's not the only reason we made the decision. We need a vehicle that's going to improve our efficiency as well as our fuel economy. Chris Blake made the decision that we're going to add sedans to the fleet. What I did in an unprecedented fashion was get feedback, because again, we didn't add the sedan that I initially was going to when it was very expedient to do so. We got your feedback and we incorporated a great deal of your feedback, but you advised us. And once we got your advice, we moved forward with the procurement process. All the AAC knows at this point is we're going to get sedans added to the fleet. We've told them what we would like, but we will see what comes down the pike. And again, what came down the pike was a very comfortable, fuel efficient, affordable vehicle that thousands of our customers are going to like. And no, so it wasn't my responsibility to come back and say, hey, you may not get the Honda Accord, because we were not bidding for a Honda Accord. That's not how these public procurements work.
All right.
So, and as we do this now, we get ready to move into the next phase. I'll listen to any follow-up Ms. Rush may have on that, or Mr. Torres, I think he raised his hand. But I want to make it very, very clear. Chris Blake does not, and again, I think compared to what, because remember, I did Carol's job for a couple of years. I know I'm being a whole lot more transparent than what you had prior. So if this is not enough transparency, again, that's not our intention to hurt your feelings or make you feel being left out, but your role is to advise. I'm going to tell you what our business decisions are, or business decision is. I'm going to ask you for your advice. Once you give me your advice, I move on.
So, Ms. Rush and Mr. Torres, can I put you on public comment? Because I do want to get to the other three topics.
Well, I think it's not fair, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman, for a statement to be made like, because this is what you did me the last time.
Okay, then go ahead.
You separated me from responding from my comment, so you lose the entire flavor of the thing. And I that's not fair to me at all. What I'd like to say, Mr. Blake, it is highly suspicious that in any bidding situation that you end up with only one winner, okay, that alone should require a major investigation, because that's wrong. Now, okay. you are of the opinion that you are the boss man and you're in charge. Well, I want you to know, as a taxpayer, I'm your boss man. I am paying you and subsidizing WMATA, okay? You're using my fares to pay for the service, okay? So either way, so whether I am on the AAC or I'm not on the AAC, and all the members of the AAC are users of the system, and as a result, that entitles them to tell you whatever they need to tell you to accommodate them on a service that they are paying for, okay? So this sort of, you know, drunk on power mentality that you have when talking to the to us is absolutely wrongheaded, and I suggest you change it, okay? We are entitled to transparency as taxpayers. We are entitled to input as disabled people and as members of the public, okay? So it's very wrong, and this is why WMATA gets into trouble in the way that it does, because it has this drunk on power attitude
where it can do whatever it wants because it's named WMATA and it has all the marbles and is in charge, okay? And you keep conflating issues that we're talking about to muddle it up so it seems as though we have no clue what we're talking about and we're asking for something that is unreasonable, okay? You do that very often. But you may fool others, but you're not going to fool me with it because I know exactly the tactic that you're pulling off. Telling me that I have the ability to make input. I don't want to have, once we in the disabled community make recommendations to you and it goes to procurement, it is understood that these recommendations are being accepted and sent to procurement and why would we expect that those recommendations would be rejected? And if they were rejected, you need to come and explain why it was rejected, but you don't do that. You simply drop the axe on it. And that is wrong. I can accept many things, but you see, if it is not explained, I will reject it as suspicious, and anybody should reject it. Because it is not the way that you respectfully manage information that you are providing to people that you respect, okay? If it is your boss that you have to report to, you don't say, look, boss man, I know you recommended this, but I'm just gonna go ahead and buy this vehicle without this requirement because, I don't have enough bidders or whatever the silly reason is. Okay, you come to the boss man, he says, look, let me convince you why. Let me explain to you why you have to get, I don't have a choice. You explain why you don't have a choice. That's what you do to somebody you respect. But because you look down and disrespect the disabled community, disrespect the people you're supposed to be serving, you develop this drunken power attitude. Well, the decision has been made and it is final. Well, in a decision, as far as I'm concerned, that is hogwash, and I don't accept it. And again, I repeat, I will fight you. Thank you.
Thank you.
No response to that.
All right, so...
Next subject?
You have next subject.
Okay, because it all works together.
Mr. Chris, I didn't hear what you said. I'm so sorry, Mr. Blake. I'm sorry to interrupt. What did you say? You said your response was... something that you want to say? I didn't hear what you said.
Are you speaking to Chris Blake?
Mr. Blake, this is the interpreter clarifying, yes. Just clarifying.
What did you just say
after Mr. Torres? I just didn't hear it.
I said, I'm not going to respond to that. Can I go to the next subject?
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blake. I'm sorry.
Typical, very no typical.
Right. Okay. So, the Metro Access Next Generation van, because it really works the same way. And so let me just remind the committee and members of the public. Yes, we had two presentations. Well, we had discussions by me at first and two presentations. And let me go all the way back to the beginning. This started because there was a purchase of the Ford Transit vehicles prior to my assuming this role in which the AAC had zero input. Heck, ADAP had very little, if you remember that, Carol. So you had zero input. Certainly a lot less than you had with the sedans and here. So we've also had your input on the modifications to the Ford Transit vehicles to try to make them more comfortable. We've changed some of the seats. We've done a lot of things in response to not only AAC comments, but comments we receive from customers in general. And we even have a reasonable accommodation for some customers who simply cannot fit on the Ford Transits. So we have them on a special list and we only send certain vehicles to those customers. Because of the Ford Transits and the lack of input from the committee on the Ford Transits, faster than we normally would have, because we would have still been buying the Ford Transits, we decided to move in a different direction and try to get a newer vehicle or a different vehicle type into the fleet as soon as possible. The AAC gave us 13 specific recommendations full-size door with for walk-in passengers. If there's going to be a ramp, make sure it's a low-angle ramp. More aisle space to move past wheelchairs to seats. Comfortable seats at ADA height with one bariatric chair. Interior ceiling headroom. Headrests on seats. Seat belts built into seats. Increased handholds in the vehicle. LED lights to increase the interior lighting. USB charging ports near their seats. Large side windows, overhead grab bar, and improvements in the air conditioning. Those were the specific recommendations from the AAC from you to Mr. Millis, and he's incorporated those into the solicitation. That's gonna go public very soon. And very much like what we just went through and experienced with the sedans, it's going to be a public it's going to be a public solicitation. We're going to see the feedback that we receive. We will see the proposals that we receive. AAC gave us 13 specific things. I have my number one goal in this is to have low floor ramp. Will we get it? We'll see. But again, I'm just going to say this, and we're not apologizing, but we just have to be frank about it. Will the AAC, will we get a proposal that incorporates all of the recommendations from the AAC? We very much well could. Would we get one that incorporates everything from the AAC plus the low floor ramp that I want at a reasonable price? We may. Will we get everything the AAC wants, but still cause us to go through another round with a wheelchair lift? We might. Can we get everything the AAC wants plus a ramp, but it comes at a god-awful price? No, we're not, because I'm not going to pay a god-awful price for the vehicle. So my point is, you know, can we get 90% of what the AAC wants and it comes with a ramp and a reasonable price? We very much could. My point is, once this goes to the procurement process, the only update you're going to get from me, as you did with the sedans, is how close are we? We're close. We're getting there. We're almost there. But on all of the day-to-day, point-by-point, I don't believe that's the role of the AAC or me to be providing that to the AAC. I'm going to stand on that. I will say this. If the van comes with everything the AAC has requested in these meetings, great. I'll be happy. If it doesn't come with everything, it comes with 12 out of the 13 or 10 out of the 13. If there's a member of the committee or a member of the public who feels that then in terms is disrespectful or ignoring you, again, that's not at Metro's intention. You've advised us, we've taken your advice, and what we're trying to do is get a good vehicle into the service, providing paratransit service, in doing so in a safe, efficient manner. So I can answer any questions about the upcoming van solicitation, but it's gonna be the same situation. With the sedans, I had one big thing in mind, which was accommodate the many, many customers who I know wanna ride in a sedan. And if that meant we didn't get every single item that was advised of us, okay, because I know that there are thousands of customers who are going to be enjoying riding in those sedans. In this case, my number one goal is to get a low floor ramp, both for customers in wheelchairs, but also to avoid incidents and injuries of customers on the wheelchair lifts that we've experienced in the past. However, we will see what comes down the pike. I do not forecast any solicitations. And one last thing I have to say, I said this when we first talked about buying a new van to move away eventually from the current four transits that we have, that you didn't have any input on. If you know one thing about me, I do not exclude any company from any solicitation. I don't get into that. So it very, very well could be that the vehicle that is proposed and eventually selected is another Ford Transit, but a Ford Transit that would be modified much more like what we've talked about over these last couple of years than what was first introduced into this fleet. So you have to be open-minded. We've taken your advice. We're going to move forward with a procurement. I could answer any questions now about
it. So I see Phil's hand, and Anu's going to help me. There's any other hands?
Not at the moment, Chair Semaphore.
Go ahead, Phil.
The question again is, will they put the RFP out with whoever the supplier is doing all of the upfitting, or will it just be an off-the-lot van that we do the upfitting? And if we are having the upfit, you know the major problem, lessons learned, was Ford went to Unibody Construction. And when they went to Unibody Construction, there was a lot of the upfitting that could not be done. And so the question is, will they bid it as a van that is upfittable, and then we do the upfitting, or are we going to expect some company to give us a complete van off the lot, turnkey, ready to go?
No, they're, well, let's put it this way. Let me not say no, because I don't know the universe, and we're reaching out to as many companies as possible. But I could start with this, Phil, is that this is the traditional Metro Access vehicle procurement. So the way we bought vans for 23 years is how this procurement is going to be applied. Whereas I went into the last solicitation specifically saying I want an off-the-lot vehicle. This here is not a off-the-lot vehicle purchase. Now, could there be a company somewhere out there that sells these type of vehicles off the lot without modification? Generally speaking, I think the answer is no. We've done a lot of market research. I believe the answer is no, but is it possible that a company ABC out of, you know, Timbuktu, Colorado, could say, hey, I'm selling you this van and it has everything you're asking for right off of my lot? That is possible. So I don't exclude anybody. But to answer your question as clearly as I can, this is the traditional Metro Access vehicle purchase.
So when they put their RFP out, they won't have all this extra stuff in it. It'll just be a van of a specific size, nature, or whatever.
No, it's going to have some of the things of the 13, for example, of the 13 things of the AAC, some of these are going to be mandatory. I believe some are like, for example, USB charging ports. That's optional. We're asking for it, but we're not going to exclude hundreds of potential bidders because they don't have USB charging ports in their vehicles. So it's in there, but it may not be mandatory. The ramp, for example, my biggest thing with this is to have a low floor ramp equipped vehicle, much like we've already done on our fixed route buses, but we're not making a ramp mandatory. It is an option so that those companies that are still wedded to wheelchair lifts can bid on this as well. And again, it could be a company that gives us a wheelchair lift and everything the AAC has asked for. And if they do it at a reasonable price, they may just win. So in that case, I'll be the one not getting what I want per se. I really believe we need to move to a low floor ramp equipped vehicle, but it all depends on cost and what are all the features that are being offered by that particular vehicle. So no, the 13 things I read off plus the items that Metro staff is interested in are going to be in the solicitation. You're not just buying a van, a generic van with a certain amount of space. No, we're not doing that. That was the off-the-lot sedan purchase. This is a specific customized vehicle purchase.
Great. Will you tell us when the RFP is posted so we can go take a look at it?
I will do that right away. Yes, sir.
Have they done an RFI before they put together the RFP?
I want to say I think we did. Well, we did market research. I don't know if we did an actual RFI. I don't believe that was the case, but we did do a lot of market research, more so in an effort to try to find as many potential bidders as possible.
All right. Any other comments? Because we got two more topics and an announcement. If not, this topic will come back to the AAC, obviously. If not, next will be Mr. Schaefer. You got your two topics.
Okay, well.
So the first one is the easy, the website booking. I only have one question for you. So go ahead and make your presentation for that.
Okay. Just to be clear, I don't have anything on EasyPay that I know of. And so if Chris or Tarian knows what that's about, they can pipe in. But I was going to speak about the new password requirements that we're going to put on the web booking. As you all know, that traditionally your password has been your birth date. And the only way you could change that was calling into eligibility and asking them to make it something else. So to increase the convenience and also your own security, we're going to create a process where the next time you sign in, not tomorrow, but when we set this up in the next couple of weeks, you'll be asked to change your password. And so it's just a simple process. I've tested it, put in your old password, new password twice, make sure they match, and submit. And then you're going to be asked, if you don't already have your email on file, to put your email in to the system. That way you'll be able to recover your password if eligibility is closed. And you're trying to book something at night and can't get anybody on the phone and you've forgotten your password. The thing that we're still evaluating is how strong to require the password to be for security reasons. And that's, we're still working out with Trapeze what we can do. At the moment, it'll be alphanumeric, but we are debating whether Trapeze can force one capital and a small letter and a number. So we're working on refining that. But that should be worked out in the next couple of weeks. And of course, we let everybody know before we plan to do this.
So follow-up question to you on the communication of this, because this is affecting people and their access to just to see their account and do easy pay, right? And all this stuff. Is there a way we can put, again, on the IVR when this is to be folded out, since it's not feasible to send something in print to everybody because you have thousands of customers, to make it accessible, they call in the main number, they hit whatever option, and there's a fax that's there 24/7 that they can refer to of common questions as I look at the rest of the Metro Access staff. Is that feasible to do on the IVR?
So, yes.
Who was going to take that answer? Question answered. I just want to make sure the communication of this is very clear once it is finalized to customers.
Once it's finalized, the information will get out. But I think, David, we're still testing this a little bit, are we?
Well, I haven't tested the final password strength requirement.
So this is a preview, yes.
Yeah. So, but there's no reason. I just got to make sure that the label on the form field spells out the criteria enough so that it's clear. So that would be the last touch.
Yeah, only because this is dealing with people going to deal with their money and their account information, this needs to be communicated to everyone very clearly. And the only feasible way I can see that is they dial in that main number, they hit this number, there's a set of facts that they can refer to. And start there. And if there needs to be a human being involved for them to reach out to, then we can discuss that. But I just need to make sure this is clearly explained to customers. This is a major thing for them. And for some of them, it's maybe very, even I may find it simple. For someone else, it may be a very difficult thing for them to do.
Which is why I'm trying to make sure it's very simple and straightforward. Yeah, we're very sensitive to that. And quite frankly, the issue of how strong to make the password is also a function of usability. you know, obviously, if you're computer savvy and concerned about your data, you know how to create a secure password with symbols and so forth. But there's a limit to how complex we can force it that people can still remember it if they have difficulty remembering things like that. So we're working on that balance. And it's also then a function of the limitations of what trapeze can do. So, you know, I'm looking at it from the ease of use perspective. They're looking at it from the functionality perspective, and we'll come to a compromise on that.
All right. So when that information does come to fruition, we would expect you or Mr. Blake to come back to the committee, unless this is the deadline date. And then we would like to obviously advise in this case how to deliver that communication-wise to customers. Perfect. Because this is such a very major thing happening to everybody.
Right. We'll put a notice on the website too, on the Metro Access page.
Now, on the website booking, you said you had nothing new to report, right?
Well, I had a question about the password.
Okay, go ahead, Phil.
One question is just rhetorical, and that is there any reason to do this? Have there been issues with the current passwords? And the other one is, will you have I forgot my password that you can click so that you can reset it, in which case you'll need some questions to answer, et cetera, et cetera. So the question is there a reason to do this? Has there been a breach anywhere along the line? And if there is, great. And if I forget my password, what do I do?
There has been no breach. Well, IT security monitors that stuff all the time, but it's part of a general program of increasing our cybersecurity overall, and our sensitivity to your needs, and the fact that it's so easy to find out somebody's birth date. And if you've got that and you happen to get a hold of their Metro Access number, you could see where someone's going to be tomorrow. You could see their addresses. You could see other information. I mean, we don't have credit card information on there, but, you know, just realizing with the increased issue of security these days and the sensitivity of your information, we felt that this was something that we really needed to do.
Go ahead, Mr. Torres, I see your hand is up.
And what about the forget password?
Oh, yes,
that's what I was saying. That's why we need your email, so that you can do that yourself. I mean, most people we believe that are using web booking have email addresses and are computer savvy. But for the people that use it and don't have email or haven't given it to us, then we need to put that in there so you can recover it on your own.
Go ahead, Mr. Torres.
Yeah, I have three questions.
The first one
is why or can we not place the web booking app on the WMATA homepage to make it easier for disabled people to access it?
Also, Mr. Torres, we cannot hear you.
Oh, you can't? I'm sorry.
He's muted right now.
Yeah. Go ahead. I see you unmuted. Go ahead. Yep, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. Basically three questions. One, can we simply place the web booking app on the WMATA homepage, which will make it easier for people with disabilities, people who are blind, looking to book their ride, can simply go to the homepage and get it, because there are other conveniences that are made available to the bus rail people, and they have access on the homepage. We want equal access. Secondly, there's an announcement feature that is part of the web booking app. Can we use that to announce things more than just, you know, COVID stuff? There's a lot of information that we need that would be helpful if it were placed there. And the third thing, do we have a date for when that issue with the address fields could be fixed for people who use JAWS? When you go, as I've mentioned at a previous meeting, when you try to put in your address, instead of saying, or instead of asking you for your address, it says unit. And that makes no sense. And something strange that I saw today, my apartment number is showing up before my street address number, separated by a dash. I'm not sure. I've never seen anything crazy like that before. This is the first place I'm seeing that, and I have listed my address in many databases. Is there some reason why that's happening?
Okay, let me try to take all those. Let me do the last one first, which is there. I think that must be something in your profile that needs to be checked.
Okay, I will do that.
Put error in whoever is on the call from eligibility can look into that. Don't know whether it's Chris or B or.
Well, what was interesting, I tried to change it by typing in my address starting with the street address, and it told me you couldn't find the address. And it's only when I left it like that it was able to actually find my address. So it's finding my address with the apartment number connected to the street address with a dash. So it was a very strange thing.
Yeah, well, that must be the way it was entered was geocoded for your location.
So but you would think if I put in my street address that it would find that, but it's not finding it. All right, go ahead. What's the other one?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a Google problem that's sometimes not within our control. As to the unit number, the unit means suite. It's in the field after the address line, and I guess the word unit might be somewhat confusing, but
why doesn't it go to the street address line? Why doesn't it go straight to street address? I can understand unit. If it makes unit makes sense after you get to the street address, but not bypassing street address to go to unit first.
My tab does not bypass that form field. So
well, perhaps I need to give you a demonstration. All right.
Yeah, that would be fine. We can set that up on a Zoom call. And the first question as to the link on the homepage, that's really a design issue. Due to your advocacy, the Metro Access is linked on the first page.
Metro Access is not on the homepage, sir. I've checked, there's nothing that says Metro Access on the homepage.
I was pretty sure we put that link.
Let me correct you. No, it is on the home page. If you go under service, which is where Rail.
No. Service is on the home page. Metro Access isn't.
Service, right? But neither is bus or rail. Metro Access is where bus and rail is. It's now grouped together. So if you want service, because that was the discussion and that was the request at the time was. You have rail, bus, and accessibility, and you and others said, what the heck is accessibility? That doesn't mean Metro Access. So we changed that to rail, bus, and Metro Access. And now when you click on Metro Access, it goes to what used to be the accessibility page, but we've moved all the Metro Access information up to
but
the
it's
top
still,
of the page.
So Blake, it still says accessibility where it says accessibility on the homepage. No, so sir. I'm not sure what... I mean, it may be cosmetic, you know, under the hood correction, but in terms of the first page that the public accesses, it still says access. It doesn't say Metro Access.
No, it says that all the way at the bottom.
It still says accessibility.
All the way at the bottom. Now, what we're talking about is serving, because at the bottom is map schedules, rail map, rail station. But when we're talking about the service, under service, there's rail, bus, and Metro Access.
Right, but it also says tourists. It refers to tourists on the homepage. It doesn't refer to disabled people on the homepage. We live here, the tourists don't. I think we have first priority.
Okay, and in this case, paratransit customers have priority equal to those of fixed route customers. Because guess what, Mr. Torres? Some of our paratransit customers are tourists as well.
Yeah, I understand that. And I am not saying don't put it there for the tourists. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is that if you can accommodate the tourists, you can certainly accommodate the disabled people.
And we're doing that right next to this rail, there's bus. And
well, when it's on the same level as tourists, then we have arrived. But okay. Right now we're given smoke and mirrors with that kind of talk. Okay.
All right. Well, we'll look into that again. We'll take that under advisement.
When the disabled can be equal to tourists, then we're good. Thanks.
Okay.
So Mr. Schaefer, I have my questions about the web booking site. So y'all did finally fix that problem with the PCA where it doesn't give the error trying to book the trip. So I see that was done.
Well, Paul, can I say one thing real quick?
Yes.
Our tourists don't get to ride in nice, brand new, comfortable sedans.
All right.
Okay. Now I'm very satisfied, Mr. Blake. Very satisfied.
All right, Mr. Schaefer?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So kudos for finally, I know it took longer than expected to get that fixed. The other piece was I noticed, remember in the when this new web booking site came about, you were able to book things on a, you know, every hour on a 24-hour scale, even after midnight. I did notice, I guess, when that mistake was corrected, like between the hours of 1 and 5, you can't book a trip using those hours. I see you can book like on the next day at from 12 to 1 and then it starts at 5 a.m. I guess that means if you can't book at that hour because of the equivalence of service, that's fine, but usually it would tell you that. But does that mean if you want to get a trip between 1 and 5 a.m., a pickup, you would need to call reservations? Because that was there before, it said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 a.m. And now it just stops at 1 and then picks up at 5 a.m.
I'll have to look into that. I wasn't aware of that. The last time I checked, it was you could book, the only times you couldn't book were like between 3 and 4 a.m.
Well, the way it reads.
If there's no fixed route equivalent service, there should be no booking of trips.
Right.
Because normally it will tell you if it can't do it that hour, it will give you the message, like you said, Mr. Blake, you can't book this trip at this time, choose another time. But from what I read is, when I look at it, like right now is, the next day, 12 a.m., you know, shows 12, 15, 45, 1 a.m. And then the next time for every day is 5 a.m. that you can book again. So those 4 hours were sort of taken out.
We have to look at your specific circumstance to see if it's you or if it's the service area you're in.
Yeah, I think
I'm not sure. I'm not sure why you're.
I can set up a Zoom meeting and show you and explain from what I saw before, or because it happened around when this particular issue was resolved. I just saw, I don't see the. If I wanted to do a 2, 3, or 4 a.m. pickup any day of the week, it doesn't give that. All it gives is one up to 1, and then 5 a.m. is the next pickup time.
Okay.
That could possibly be, again, because I know that during the week, rail service doesn't begin until 5 a.m., and unless you're in an area with local fixed route service, theoretically, you don't have any service, but that shouldn't mean that the clock wouldn't show. Again, I think we should table this one. Let's look at it.
No, I'm just putting it out there to, you know, I can schedule a Zoom meeting and explain it to Mr. Schaefer and the involved staff.
I understand the issue. I'll look at it.
Okay.
Paul?
Yes?
Yeah, I think you cut David off from answering my question about announcements. I didn't get an answer to that one.
I
think your suggestion about using that announcement for this password change is a good idea. We could alert people a couple of weeks in advance by putting it up there. You know.
That's one of the things that Metro Access needs to do. They need to take advantage of their tools of communication that will help alleviate a lot of the sorrows that I am experiencing personally. And I know other people have spoken out on this information issue.
Yeah, that's what I was suggesting, Ms. Torres. My first suggestion, use the IVR, a brief mention about it, and then hit this option for more detailed factor information.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. If there's not anything else for Mr. Schaefer, we're going to move on, I guess, to Hettaging Ward announcement. Is that going to be you or new?
Mr. Blake, did you want some information. Did you want to make any comments about the Hattinger Award? You're muted.
I think you should share the feedback you received, but it's their decision. I mean, before you make any announcement, let's be clear with the chairman, and I mean the AAC chairman, no disrespect, Paul, but.
Oh no, that's all the AAC, not me.
Right. correct me if I'm wrong, this wasn't the official vote. These were nominations, correct?
Correct.
Three nominations so far in my email. I hope everybody else has seen them. There was one from Patrick, two from Tino, and one from Denise. And those are the three that I'm aware of. And I think at this point, they need to be circulated to the entire committee and make sure everybody reads them. And then however you want to do the vote, if you want to do it by email.
I think Steve also sent it.
And Anthony.
Thank you. I hadn't seen Anthony's.
Steve.
Okay.
Do we necessarily need to announce the nominees, or can we just send it out to the committee members and then you all vote by expressing your opinion to anew?
Yeah, I think we can send them out to the committee members. And I think what we might want to do at the beginning of the next AAC meeting is have the nominators give a little short talk about why they think that person or persons, you know, ought to get the vote, and then let's go ahead and do the vote.
Agreed.
Okay. So in that case, the entire committee should expect my email tomorrow morning. And I will share all the nominations received. And if any further communication needs to happen, please email. And then as Dr. Posner recommended, the individuals who have given their nominations can make the comments for the nominees, right?
Right.
Right. Can we put that on the agenda after Mr. Wiedefeld gives his original talk, because we always are nice to our guests if he is coming to the next meeting.
Sure, this will be a topic.
All right, so I guess that will be done. So Anu, besides Rico, is there any other person for public comment?
I have not received any emails nor any phone call messages, and I do not have any chat message, anyone informing about their public comments. Mr. Torres, I see your hand up. Are you intending to speak during public comment?
Yes.
Okay, I will have you on the list. So as of right now, we have Rico and then Ansel Torres.
All right, so Rico, go ahead.
So my Smart Trip card is not working every single time that I use the train. What should I do?
Please call 202-962-2700. Actually, send me an email. Send me an email, because you have my email address. This will make it easier. Send me an email with your Metro Access ID number, and we will inform the eligibility office who has control of the cards, and they will first check with our treasury team to see if there's a malfunction with your particular card, and therefore we need to get you a new card, or if there's just a glitch and they can fix it technically. So you send me an email, send me your number, and we'll get it moving quickly. Now, just remind me, because you said it's not working, and I can't remember every single customer. Are you Metro Access eligible?
I have the yellow card.
Okay, so that means, so then we just want to make sure that then there's money on the card and all that kind of good stuff. But we'll follow up with you and figure out what's going on with your car.
Yes, please. Thank you so much. But it's not working.
I got you.
Well, I tried. I tried to use it on the train.
I believe you.
And Wednesday and Thursday, and I couldn't. And there was no, and right, I'm stuck. So what do I do?
If there's a malfunction on the card, you should go to the station manager and explain the circumstance, and he or she will obviously test the card and maybe even ask you.
I explained to the manager and they told me to please contact customer service. That's all they said. And I said that they told me to contact customer service.
But did they let you travel? Did they let you go to your next destination?
Yes, I did travel.
Well, there you go. Okay, that's the point we're trying to get to. So we want to fix your card, but we certainly don't want you stuck in the system or on outside of a bus.
All right.
No. Again, I'm saying that I use the train to travel to PG County, but I was stuck.
So they did,
because my card was not working.
But did the station manager let you through to get to your point until you could get your card fixed?
I tried, but it's not working.
Okay.
I tried, but it's not working.
Send me an email and we'll work on it as soon as possible.
All right. But I don't know what to do.
Send me an email.
Thank you. Mr.
Paul, give me a second, please.
Okay.
Hold on.
Hold on. We still did one interpretation here.
Yes.
I will do. Thank you very much, Chris. Wait a second, just a minute. Yes, Mr. Blake, I will do that. And I do have your email. Thank you so much. I will send you an email tonight. Thank you very much.
Okay, great.
All right, go ahead, Mr.
Thank you, Paul. We're ready to rock.
No problem.
Okay, thank you. Accountability and transparency are two words that we need to use very generously at these meetings, and it should be our watchwords. I obviously don't believe there's much of that going on here at these meetings and at WMATA in general. And in speaking to a number of former members of the AAC, it was my understanding that there was a memorandum of understanding that was prepared. And what that did was to delineate very clearly the boundaries for the AAC and WMATA. Because what's going on here is a serious power struggle. A power struggle to control the destiny and the future of disabled people and transportation in the Washington, D.C. area. I believe, and I'd like to put it before the AAC for consideration and maybe one day for a motion, that a memorandum of understanding be constructed to address these very issues so that it is very clear from the outset
where the boundaries are, and then we will adjust our fight accordingly. But until that is clear, there will always be this pushback, at least from me. And so that's my recommendation. And in closing, I would like to apologize to Mr. Blake, because I said something earlier on that I regret. And I said that I reject you. And I would like to quickly take that back, because I do not reject you. In many ways, I have admiration for the dedication that you put into doing your job. I may not think that you do it right, and I will continue to fight you on the issues where I believe you're absolutely wrong. But there's no way that I can say in good conscience that I reject you. I do not reject you or anybody that I converse with on this. And my temper got the better of me, and I apologize for that. Thank you. Those are my comments.
Well, part of the reasons I didn't get married till I was 42 is because I had a lot of rejection.
Excuse me, I didn't hear what you said, Mr. Blank.
I'll tell you later, sir. I'll tell you, but it's all
good. I'll listen to it on the recording.
It's all good.
So thank okay. you. Go ahead.
We have Dr. Posner. He has his hand up. So Dr. Posner,
yeah, go ahead. Just some information on the memo of understanding, and Patrick may want to correct me if I'm wrong, but the original E&D committee, Elderly and Disabled Committee, was set up following a lawsuit. And we reported at that point to the general manager. There was a time limit on that memo of understanding, and it expired at the point that this committee was moved to report directly to the board. And at that point, we were told there was no need for a memo of understanding anymore. Instead, we have bylaws, and the bylaws describe what we're going to do. And what can be done is, at some point, if we decide to revise the bylaws.
Well, I think the bylaws are not very detailed in the areas that it needs to be detailed to define some of the things that go down at these meetings. The bylaws are very general, and suffice it to say, when I read the bylaws, I realize the bylaws are pretty much ignored at these meetings. And so I think there really needs to be a clear definition of things, because that's one of the things that happens at WMATA. You don't have documentation. When you don't have documentation of what is supposed to be happening, then it's a free-for-all, and people will fill in the blanks. You know, there are power vacuums that will develop, and folks will move in and take that space simply because, well, there's nobody saying I can't, because the rules don't say that I can't. And so we keep fighting over what seems like a never-ending set of things, whereas if it was clearly delineated, that is not acceptable, that is not the way it should be done, that's not the way the rules say that it should be done, I think you would have less of that happening. And that's what I mean by transparency and accountability. It creates a better level of accountability and transparency.
Well, all I can say, I mean, and again, this is your committee, your meetings, and the bylaws, I think, are just fine. Frankly, I don't know what we're not following in the bylaws. And again, the level of transparency, I think, is part of, and it's not going to change. We're still going to be transparent, but I think it's part of what's driving some individuals' frustrations. Because again, being transparent and getting input does not mean that you have been given authority. Advice is not a mandate. Advice is not a directive. Advice is just that, advice, and you advise the board. The best way some folks avoided this type of drama was to not share a whole lot of information and just say, hey, your role is to advise the board. I could have easily, if we just using the sedan as an example, I could have easily just done that because we had a contract for a Chevy Malibu that I know, again, as I've stated, I'm gonna keep saying it, and it's in the record. And by the way, the record is complete documentation directly to the board. You have a board report, you have many minutes, and everybody's comments are included in those minutes. And to the extent that they are in the board report, that's up to the chair. If folks are seeking authority over the direction and the actions of staff, I don't know if the AAC is it, because the AAC doesn't have that authority. And I don't know, and I've worked at another transit agency and I've consulted with other transit agencies. I don't know any advisory committee in this nation that gives its advisory committee authority over the board, authority over staff in their actions. Advice, yes, and we take your advice. Authority, mandates, directives, I don't see that. I don't see that as the role of an advisory committee.
Mr. Blake, you are a servant of the public. Your job is to serve
the public. I don't have to be on the AAC to have any authority over you or WMATA. As a member, as a tax-paying member of the public, I do have that authority. So I don't need AAC to give me that.
Okay, if you believe you have the authority to
We all do. As members of the public and as tax-paying citizens, we have that authority. You serve us. We don't serve you, and you seem to forget that.
And I think in the service that we're doing a great job in those customers, because I'm not serving Ansel Torres singularly.
Well,
I'm
you serve the public.
The public. And when it comes to the sedans, I'm going to be serving thousands of customers who are going to absolutely love them because they've already been asking for them.
Question. I have a question for Ms. Williams-Hall next, if she... Look
at her. Yes, she's here. How can I help?
So a member back in April, we discussed about drivers and customers signing the manifest that we're trying to become paperless. Mm-hmm. While there's some providers that, you know, don't have customers that don't sign, there's still some that do. So is there any way, what is the deal on that?
Well, that shouldn't be happening.
It's still inconsistent.
That absolutely should not be happening. The good news is that many of our service delivery providers are on this call. In fact, the practice of discontinuing the use of the manifest right now is solely related to COVID best practices.
Yeah, it actually is in this time period, yes.
Yes, at this point, we've not done anything to officially change our policy with regard to paper manifests, except to say that while COVID is underway, we're discontinuing the use. So there is a much longer term effort with regard to that that's not been put in place. But you should not experience a difference between one provider and another when you board the vehicle. So I will definitely address that again, because this, you're right, you mentioned this before. We addressed it with service delivery, we're assured this was not a problem. We'll go back and we'll reinforce these behaviors again. Ask our quality assurance providers that as much as they can when they're out there to observe for that kind of activity and let us know about it. If I can add,
and she's going to do that. We're going to follow up with service delivery providers. But Paul, we want to address your concerns. Once we've addressed it granularly or in a macro level with the service delivery providers, the best thing you can do for me, and you have you've texted me all types of times a day and night on various things. The minute it happens or after you've been dropped off, if you let me know the specific time, trip, then we can deal with the individual, because every provider, if we just open up the line, they'll all come on and say, oh yeah, we've done it. We've told our drivers. And the best way to deal with it now is one-on-one. We need to get to the macro level. So if it happens to you, the only way we can do something about it is if you let us know.
Because it seems like there's some drivers that don't do it. They just sign the manifest. They know you're there. But it just seems it's like half and half.
You have my cell phone number. I don't know if Ms. Williams is ready to start giving out her cell phone numbers to all the customers. I wouldn't do it because you get all kind of calls, all types of, not from AAC members. They can call me anytime.
No, me, I text.
Text me, yes, and I appreciate that. Send me the information, text me. You know all the good information to send me, and we can address that particular driver in his or her behavior.
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to be clear, during COVID, as most companies have moved away, we can't sanitize every pen you sign.
Right.
You know, just note it. That the customer is on board, and because I had one driver today, I guess you want me to write refuse to sign, you know, as he's trying to present it to me and say, you sign it yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to get clarification on that.
No, you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right. That shouldn't be happening. And I am reinforcing this with service delivery as we speak.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, you're quite welcome, sir.
We have 9 more minutes. Any other pressing issues from any other members? Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All right, all those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
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 Nays, abstentions, motion carries, we're adjourned.
Have a safe trip home.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Great job, Mr. Summerford. Good job, interpreters. Y'all have a good night.
Later, night.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
Night.
Night,
everyone.
Good
night.
I knew we're okay with what I recorded.
Okay, great. So I'll send that forward.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Have a good afternoon, evening. Stay safe.